Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Dana Workman from Haunted Highway on Sci-Fi, and you're listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on LiveParanormal.com. Boom.
This is Bill Murphy of Sci-Fi Channel's Fact or Fake Paranormal Files, and you're listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on LiveParanormal.com.
Hey everybody, this is Rex Williams, the medic from Destination Truth, and you're listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia, on LiveParanormal.com.
This is True TV's haunting evidence investigator, Patrick Burns.
And ghost huntress author, Marley Gibson.
And you're listening to Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli.
And Michael Perry.
And we're here. Hello, we're here at the Ghost Host with Sophia Temporelli and weekly at liveparanormal.com.
This is Stefan Brigati from Pacific Coast Paranormal, and you're listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on liveparanormal.com. She rocks.
This is Christopher Sanders with My Ghost Story on Biography. You are listening to The Ghost Host with Sophia Temporelli on LiveParanormal.com.
Hi, this is Professor Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist, and you're listening to The Ghost Host with Sophia Temporelli on LiveParanormal.com.
This is author Alexandra Holzer, and you're listening to Ghost Host Sophia Temporelli.
Hi, this is Jeff Belanger, host of 30 Odd Minutes, founder of GhostVillage.com, and author of lots of your favorite paranormal books, and you're listening to the Ghost Host Sophia on LiveParanormal.com. Boo!
This is Nick Groff, executive producer of Ghost Adventures, the original documentary in Ghost Adventures, season 1 through 10, and executive producer of Ghost Stalkers, author of Chasing Spirits, the building of the Ghost Adventures crew, and founder of NickGroffTours.com. You are listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on LiveParanormal.com. Tune in.
Hey, this is Zach Bagans from Ghost Adventures, and you are listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on LiveParanormal.com.
That's right, it's the Ghost Host Show with Sophia Temporelli on LiveParanormal.com. And congratulations, Sophia, on celebrating over 12 years of broadcasting on LiveParanormal.com and now on GhostHunting.com. So welcome, everybody, from the audience there. And as well, thank you, Rob Sarek, the site founder, for providing this format each and every week. And to all of our moderators, thank you so much for patching us through at live events when we had no internet feed. This is one of the most incredible shows we're about to have today. Today, we welcome Dartmouth College Film and Media Emerita Professor and Ghost Channel's Paranormal Reality Television and the Haunting of the 21st Century America author, Amy Lawrence. Ghost Channels and Professor Lawrence's other titles are available through Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or wherever books are sold. Next Saturday, we have April, the psychic housewife of New Jersey, as seen on the Halzer Files. She'll be returning next weekend, the 28th. Author, Ghost Adventures producer, lecturer Jeff Belanger returns on the program on the 4th of November. Don Yak paranormal investigators Ron Yakovetti and Lourdes Gonzalez, they return to the show on November 11th. Haunting Lodge documentary producers Kendall and Vera Welton will be on the program on the 18th of November. You don't want to miss any of these upcoming shows, essentially. So we have other guests that are securing their guest spots, too, as well. And a lot of promotions for some of your favorite shows will be coming up and through Travel Channel and Discovery and elsewhere, too, as well. Sophia, congratulations on 12 years of broadcasting. Let me bring you into the studio here. Let's see. It's a little slow on the switchboard. That means we have a lot of people listening, tuning in. Sophia, congratulations. You've done a fantastic job. Your show has helped a lot of people through the years. And tell us about that kitten that's been showing up at the house.
Yeah, we had a cat take up residence in our front yard. I named him Salem. He's super, super sweet. So it's, like, so sad that he doesn't have a home. We're trying to find him a home. But yeah, he's like the sweetest cat. Followed mom across the street to grandma's today. So he's just like super friendly and nice, but
yeah if you're in the SoCal area. Yeah, it's a Russian blue. It looks like that pet cemetery cat before
Church.
It was buried. So yeah. Well, you got all these sites, you got all these things your kids are into. You got the Twitter, the Instagram, all that stuff. Where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter, at Sophia Temporelli with 1L, and Instagram, just at Sophia Temporelli. And by the way, Church in the original Pet Cemetery was actually a British short hair, not a Russian blue.
Oh, okay. That's why it was named Churchill. Yeah, for Winston Churchill, I guess. Yeah, for the Prime Minister. Tell us about your guest today, Sophia. This is going to be an amazing show.
Today we welcome Dartmouth College film and media professor and Ghost Channels, Paranormal Reality Television and the Haunting of 21st Century America author Amy Lawrence. Ghost Channels and Professor Lawrence's other titles are available through Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or wherever you find your favorite books are sold. Let's welcome Professor Lawrence into the show.
Professor Lawrence, it's an honor. Thank you for coming on today.
Hi, just call me Amy.
Well, Amy, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
To start off, congratulations on all your success as a professor and all of the writings you've done and films you've made. It's just amazing to see, you know, you not only teaching film, but also incorporating, you know, these different facets of film, which include paranormal reality.
Oh, yeah. I've always enjoyed things about the paranormal and watching a lot of television. So it just seemed to all come together to give me the inspiration to do this book.
Absolutely. And where did your love for film and television start for you?
When I was a kid, I was just watching a lot of movies. I'd go out to see movies a lot with my sister. We'd spend a lot of time seeing the same thing over and over again. And on television and on PBS, they had a series called Film Odyssey, which had a lot of foreign films, Japanese films, and French films. And so I just saw all these different kinds of things that I just loved watching. I remember staying up in the old days when you got television reception so that at like 3 o'clock in the morning you could get these really strange stations that you couldn't get usually and with a lot of static and try to watch the weird films through the static. And it was just something I've always enjoyed and wanted to just keep doing more of, just watching more movies and reading about them and finding out about the actors and the directors and the writers and so on.
I completely relate to that. I also really love film and television, and I find some of the best parts of it are just, you know, being able to research the films and learn how they're made, the actors and their life stories, and, you know, getting to learn just kind of behind the scenes.
Yeah, yeah. That's always really motivated me, and it was interesting to do the same thing with television because there's so much interesting material on television and so many interesting people to think about.
Absolutely. And you were saying that you've always had, you know, an interest in the paranormal. Was it kind of like film where it was just something that you always had an interest in, or did you ever have experiences with the paranormal growing up?
Actually, I've never had any experiences with the paranormal. Once we moved into a house, and my mom told me later that the lady who had lived there and who died, that was her last residence, that my mom, when she walked into the living room, she often felt that this woman was still present, but it was a very pleasant and friendly presence, so she never minded it. Right now I live in a house that was built in 1845 and in a neighborhood mm-hmm. with a lot of houses that are even older, but I've never had any feeling in this house, and my mom hasn't either, that there's any presences here. It's all very calm and friendly, and I hope it stays that way.
Of course.
But I've just been interested in this, you know, since I was little, and it's always sort of followed me around as a topic.
Of course, especially, you know, the area on the East Coast. I mean, there's so much history there. I mean, reading that Dartmouth was one of, I think it said, 9 colleges that were started before the American Revolution. I mean, there's so much history just in where you worked in and of itself. Did you ever hear of ghost stories that happened on campus?
Not ghosts exactly, but one of the best places on campus is the cemetery, which goes back to the 1700s, because the college was founded in I think 1750, around there. And the town I'm in was founded in 1761, so it's all pre-Revolutionary War. But the cemetery is a beautiful place with old stones from when they had like 100 students, and they would come and spend a year here, and they would be out in the middle of nowhere, very far away from home, and if they died of a fever or they drowned in the river, they'd just be buried here because they couldn't send them home. And you see a lot of very sad stories on the old carved headstones and old marble headstones falling apart. And it's very, with trees that are 200 years old, it's very mysterious and has a lot of emotion attached to it. As that one place on campus where it really feels like you're in touch with the past.
Definitely. I mean, that's amazing that, you know, the college really has survived through so much. And that's the same with film, too. I mean, you know, the way it has progressed through time from silent films and, you know, evolved into reality TV. What have you seen kind of the patterns are and trends with regards to ghosts portrayals in film?
In film, it goes back way before even film, back into photography itself. I've got some beautiful spirit photographs from the 19th century that I found online, where they're one in particular that's a cyanotype, so it's blue and white, and it's a man sitting in a room, but it just looks like he's sitting next to a desk, but then you notice after a while that half of him is missing. It's just his top half. His legs are gone, and it's sort of been chemically disappeared, but it looks like he's just sort of a half an apparition. And then there's something in the wallpaper, and if you turn the image sideways, you can see two women standing holding a book, and it looks like they're either in front of striped wallpaper or they're behind bars, which is very scary. And so it's this sort of double image and two half images simultaneously next to each other. So the opportunity for ghostly images going back to the invention of photography is always really, really interesting. And then with movies, as soon as movies are made, you have Georges Méliès in France making things disappear and reappear, and haunted houses where things move on their own through animation. And it's always been sort of a thread that goes through all popular culture, and it's always fascinating when they try to find visual ways to make that happen.
Absolutely. And I know with the supernatural, it can kind of be a touchy subject for some in regards to belief in it or not belief, or whether something's demonic or not. Did you see a difference in portrayal regarding anything kind of supernatural or ghost pre-Hays Code and post-Hays Code?
I don't think the Hays Code cared that much about the supernatural. Until like the early 30s, when you get the classics, Dracula and Frankenstein and The Mummy, until that, horror movies were always seen as sort of not a serious genre. You have a few things like Lon Chaney and the German films like Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, which are so spectacular. But mostly they're seen just as folk tales or just not very serious. It's hard and you see that immediately with paranormal TV, that the people just make fun of it all the time. And even people who watch it tend to distance themselves from it and say, oh, I don't take it seriously. It's sort of trashy, and I just watch it for fun, though they watch a lot of it sometimes. But it's a way of thinking about the world that doesn't change. It's like folklore. It's deep within the culture, and people revert to that way as a way to describe things that they can't describe otherwise. And it's real in terms of emotion, and it's real in terms of their experience. And this is the language they find to describe their experience. So I'm certainly not going to tell them they're wrong. And since even if I don't have that experience, it doesn't mean they haven't had that experience. So I'm going to take people at their word. And if something is constantly a presence in popular culture, then my training is that popular culture matters. And movies mm-hmm. and television and music, it's all popular culture, and it tells us what's going on in the culture at any given time. So in the early 30s, you get horror films, and because there's a depression going on and people's lives have been turned upside down. And in Germany in the 20s, you get horror films. And when World War II starts, you get the Cat People and all the Val Lewton movies. And I Walked with a Zombie and all those really scary movies from the 40s, and ghosts coming back. So it's always there as an issue. In the early 70s, after Watergate and Vietnam, you get Texas Chainsaw Massacre and really, really scary, violent movies that show an eruption of violence and fear in America. So popular culture is always telling you what's going on. If you can get over your sort of superior sense of, oh, I know better than that, if you just pay attention to what is it that people are saying and what are they trying to communicate when they tell you about their paranormal experiences.
Definitely, and I think that's probably why some movies become cult classics, too. You know, maybe at the time it was released, it wasn't as, you know, really thought about, but then after, you know, there's people that really relate to it and are drawn to that particular film.
Oh, yes, like The Exorcist people are talking about now because it's its 50th anniversary, and that came out in the early 70s, too, when things were very disrupted and people didn't have a sense of stability anymore. And, you know, how disrupted can you get except demonic possession and exorcism and questions of faith and all of that? So it's always going to be a bellwether of what's going on.
Definitely.
Also it asks these deep fundamental questions about life and death and the spirit and God and the devil, and they're all major, major questions that people are always going to ask.
Absolutely. And when it comes to, as you're saying, you know, paranormal reality shows and film as well, there's some sets such as The Poltergeist and stuff where people believe that these sets were actually haunted or cursed. Have you done any research into that, and what are your thoughts on it?
No, I didn't do research on the production of shows because I wanted to deal with what the audience was dealing with, which is the final product that appears on TV. But, yeah, I've heard a lot of that. Rosemary's Baby is notorious for that. Mm-hmm. The Exorcist is notorious for that, where a lot of people connected with the production died prematurely or had terrible things happen to them. So, yes, that goes around. And again, at the very least, it's a way for people to deal with the unexplainable in life. That, you know, if a lot of people suddenly die and they seem to be connected in some way, to try to make sense of it all. How is it that this happened when it didn't happen on other films and that sort of thing? And does it have some connection to the content of the film that is so unsettling and seems to be beyond reasonable explanation. Partly, I think all the paranormal fiction, film, television,
mm-hmm.
reality, all of it's trying to find a way to explain things that reason seems inadequate to explain. And it's sort of challenging the rational, because it has its limits, or people find that it has its limits.
Absolutely. And as you were saying about your research with ghost channels, paranormal reality television, and the haunting of the 21st century, what did you do while researching this book to kind of dive deeper into the audience's experience?
Well, I read a lot that there isn't a lot written on paranormal reality TV shows, but there are some things. There was a very, very good book by Annette Hill that was about British paranormal reality shows, because these are popular sort of internationally, and British shows sometimes are shown in the United States, and you can pick them up, Most Haunted, and there's a very interesting one about Scotland that was on recently. And she was writing about, she didn't really look at the shows themselves, she just went straight to the audience through online research and asked people, you know, who watches these shows, why do you watch these shows, do you believe in the paranormal, do you think these shows are all fake, or do you think that they're real? And so she asked all these questions, and she got a lot of responses from the audience. And I found the most interesting thing that she found was that people would be on the, they're sort of on the fence, that on the one hand, they enjoy the shows very much, they pretend that they don't. The first response is always a defensive, oh, I'm not gullible, I know better than that. But later responses are, but maybe it could be something, and it's kind of intriguing, and I'd like to know more. So they go back and forth on why they watch it and why they care about it. And I found that was very typical of what happens whenever I try to talk to anybody about the paranormal. Most of my research, besides reading the few things that have been written about it as a TV phenomenon, is mostly I just watch a heck of a lot of television. I watch hours and hours and hours and hours. They would have like 4 or 5 hour blocks of The Haunted, followed by 5 hour blocks of Ghost Hunters, and then another channel would have 6 episodes in a row of Paranormal State. And they just, all these shows, and I had to limit myself between 2016 and 2019, because every year there are like 5 or 6 more shows, and it became impossible to keep up with them. And people also, a lot of the TV stations, they rerun shows from 10 years earlier, so you're getting constantly more and more material piling up and piling up. So I had to sort of stop and say, okay, just these shows, just between 2000 and 2019, and just for 3 years I will watch all of these shows and see what patterns emerge, what seems to be consistent across different kinds of shows. Sometimes two different shows tell the same story, but they tell it slightly differently, or they visit the same location, and they look at it differently. And so when you see hundreds and hundreds of hours of something, you start to understand it in a way that's different than if you just watch your favorite show or a few episodes now and then.
Absolutely. And I think, too, as an audience member, if you've had a paranormal experience, it really resonates with you in a different way. I've been investigating since I was 8, but I also lived in a haunted house, and I can definitely say one episode of the show, A Haunting, really kind of hit a nerve with the story that was being told of a girl being stalked in her home, because that's what I was going through. And to this day, I can't watch the episode, because for me, it's just almost like reliving it, even though it's someone else's story. So I think when people who aren't in the paranormal are watching it, it's, you know, even if they don't believe in it, but something in the back of their head just seems odd that they experienced. It kind of resonates with them in a way that, you know, someone who may not have had those experiences use it.
Definitely. I mean, it just sort of re-triggers that trauma.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially as a young child, too, going through that. We realized our house was haunted between when I was 9 and 11 years old, and it was really challenging. And, you know, just having something that was so close to kind of what I was going through is just so different to see it portrayed on TV. And I think for me as a person, I seem to lean more towards the storytelling format of paranormal shows. Just because I love seeing it played out that way.
Definitely. Well, one of the things that I found early on that intrigued me so much about these shows was particularly the first-person shows where people are telling their own stories about what happened to them, is that how strongly, even if you haven't had a paranormal experience, how strongly you identify with people who want to be believed, who need to be validated, mm-hmm. who say, you know, people, at first I didn't believe it, I thought I was crazy, other people will think I'm crazy, but this really happened, and there's so many of them who have had these experiences, and for everyone who's on television, there are probably, you know, hundreds more, and you need to take them seriously. You can't just dismiss them out of hand. And another very common thread throughout these television shows is that people had these experiences as when they were children. And one of my favorite mm-hmm. shows was Psychic Kids, Children of the Paranormal, which wasn't on for very long. It was maybe two seasons, and then they tried to bring it back about 10 years later, but they kind of messed up the purpose of the show. But the earlier one, it's all about these kids who are trying to explain to their parents, trying to explain to their friends, trying to come to grips with something that when they tell people, people think badly of them, they don't believe them, and they need to find people who understand them and who believe them. And so Chip Coffey and a woman, psychiatrist or doctor, talks to the kids, talks to the parents, introduces the kids to other kids who have special abilities, and helps them all sort of come to grips with the fact of recognizing the presence of the paranormal in their lives and how to deal with it. And this idea of even if you don't know, haven't had an experience, that you can identify with kids being bullied and kids being thinking that other mm-hmm. kids will think they're strange and kids having tension with their parents because they're different from their parents and their parents don't understand. And they can be quite moving, these shows. So people who have had experiences definitely can identify with the first-person accounts in all these shows. And even people who haven't can really feel for people who have gone through something that's so challenging and that finds so little support in the sort of outer world, where who do you turn to for help? How did you deal with your haunted house?
Well, we had investigators out to try and help. We had psychics out. The psychics were able to identify. Well, I could see the ghost, so I kind of knew who was there. I could see him. I didn't know who he was, but I knew what he looked like. And the psychics were able to validate what I was seeing. But really, the activity didn't stop until we left. The ghost was primarily focused on women. My dad never had any experiences with him, and my dog, who was a pug, she would bark really violently in the areas where I would feel the ghost. My mom would feel the ghost. I had diamond doves in my bedroom in a cage, and when he would enter my room, they would just freak out and start bouncing off the cages. And I had lived in that house from the day I came home from the hospital, and my dad had actually lived in that house as a child. My grandfather, my adoptive grandfather, was a paranoid schizophrenic, so my dad had to move out of the house at the age of 9. My grandfather wasn't the ghost haunting the house. I definitely think that it's possible that the spirit in there was actually preying on his mental illness. Yeah, it's different. I was lucky to have supportive parents and having been in the field at the time, but I also was in Catholic school. So, you know, kids didn't really believe in the paranormal. They thought it was weird. I didn't really care. But it's interesting just the shift in, as you said, so many paranormal shows were coming out at one point in time, but the shift in reality TV really changed the public's perspective. The kids I went to school with in Catholic school, I ended up going to high school with, and the ones that were like, that's weird, why are you doing that? When I got to high school, were like, oh, take us walking around the Queen Mary to look for ghosts. And that's part of the reason we wanted to have you on is because, you know, no one ever talks about really the audience's reaction to paranormal reality shows or even really reality shows in general. It's always horror movies or something like that. But there's definitely, you know, so much that paranormal reality has taken out of in terms of tabooness to the general public.
Yeah. Oh, definitely, yeah. And I like some shows are like, they're really scary, but other shows, they try to kind of talk people down, like Kim Russo's show, The Haunting of, where she would take people who had been really terrorized, often when they were young, in a haunted house. She would take them back to the haunted house, help find out who was haunting the house, and then have the person who was terrified learn about the ghost, understand the ghost, and then help the ghost move on. So all of the shows sort of followed the same trajectory where what terrified you was explained, tamed, and then you became strong enough to make it go away. And that seems to be a very positive, reassuring version, like the medium shows and the psychic shows, where people are trying to soften the distinction between the living and the dead and not make it a form of terror. Other shows, of course, try to be as scary as possible and are more of the horror genre where it's just frightening and you just have to get out. Dead Files is like that. It's very scary and often you just have to get out. I'm sorry that you just had to leave your house but I'm glad that the ghost stayed in the house and didn't follow you.
Oh, it's okay. I was more than happy to get out of there. So for me, it was like probably one of the luckiest days ever. But as you were saying too, with Kim Russo, I know she had, you know, iconic people like Shirley Jones on the show. And I think for people going through it too, it's really helpful to see, you know, someone as iconic and full of life as her. So it's like, you know, this someone that I looked up to maybe as a child with the Partridge Family. It's like, okay, they had the same experiences as me. It's relatable.
Well, one of my
really
favorites was one of my early favorites was Celebrity Ghost Stories, which would have four or five people each episode telling their stories, and then we'd see reenactments. But we'd always come back to the source, and they'd say, you know, and there were so many people, since there were three or four per episode, there were so many celebrities and people you would recognize from television and movies, and and they all had this background of the story, usually before they were famous, often when they were kids, and it really does give some validation to that, you know, they couldn't tell anybody, and now they're telling people, and they're not embarrassed about telling people this happened to me, and it matters that it happened to me, and it happens to other people, too, and we should listen to them.
Absolutely. And in your film class at Dartmouth, were you able to talk with the students about the paranormal? And if you did you get any responses from the students relating their experiences?
I did try to teach it once in a class, and I ran into a lot of resistance because all of the students were sort of feeding off each other in trying to prove that they were laughing at it, that it was obviously fake, that it was too silly, and they just didn't want to engage with it, at least not in front of each other. So it was very hard to break that defensive posture. I had hoped that I could, but no. I think that's why a book is useful, because then people can read it on their own and they don't have to defend it to other people and they don't have to admit to anything in public that they're afraid of being mocked for.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, vulnerability as a young person is definitely hard, especially around your friends. I think it's just interesting, too, as I was saying, the change of time. I had started a paranormal club in high school, and I think I had, like, 40 kids or something day, which was surprising. I don't know. There was a lot of kids. So it's just interesting to just, you know, the differences in, you know, location of where you're located and maybe I live in California. So, you know, just the differences in maybe where you're located in the ideals difference or, you know, age range, college students. It's like, hey, I'm getting my life on track. I can't talk about kid stuff. And just the shifting of time and demographic.
Yeah. Well, it could also be you approaching people on your level. You're the same age and the same experience, whereas with me, it's like they're trying to be sophisticated and collegiate and not gullible, as they would think, even if I try to say, you know, this is serious and worth considering, and take these shows seriously, even if they're using a lot of, you know, jump scares and scary music and the sort of materials of the genre that we're used to from movies and that people like to laugh at to show that they're not really scared. It's hard to sort of break through that, but I think the very existence of all of these shows, dozens and dozens of shows since the 2000, shows that this really resonates with lots and lots of people, and they might not admit it, which is why doing audience research is hard, but the very fact that the shows keep running and there's still audiences for them and they follow them onto streaming and onto internet and so on, it shows that it really does resonate with people.
Absolutely. And as you were saying, too, people might not want to admit it. With my aunt specifically, she was very intellectual, and she would tell you ghosts aren't real. But then she would also tell you about a weird experience she had at a hotel or a dream she had. And so it's like, you know, some people don't want to let the idea that, you know, it can't possibly be scientifically explained away, but also can't fully shake possibly an experience they had that is unexplainable.
Yeah, yeah. One thing I found interesting that you mentioned that you went to Catholic school, and it's like, well, a Catholic background, you have guardian angels, you have saints, you have visions, and exorcists is a fundamental part of Catholic doctrine. And one of the producers of Ghost Hunters had told me that they had a show that they thought they were sure it was going to be a big success about an exorcist. And it lasted like 3 episodes. And they said that it's really hard for shows about exorcism to become popular because they're just too dark. And they frighten people. And when people talk about The Exorcist, the movie, that it was extremely disturbing, and it still is. And so some topics of paranormal nature, on the one hand, they are fundamentally part of mainstream religions. On the other hand, they're just very disturbing.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's just the thing, too, is trying to kind of find a place for your belief system and the paranormal. I actually developed my thoughts and theories on what the afterlife is in my 8th grade religion class. And when I was saying that the ghost, I thought, preyed on my grandfather's mental illness, he was extremely devout Catholic. He was actually born in Italy, and he actually, before his mental illness took effect, was basically the Secret Service for the Pope. He was a Palatine guard and guarded the Pope with his life. So he was a very devout Catholic, and I think that's probably what the spirit preyed on, was the angels and demons of his belief system.
Ah, yes, yes.
So I definitely understand what you mean about that. I mean, it's definitely, I think, when it comes to exorcism, either too scary or, you know, people aren't going to believe it. It's in that kind of really gray area where it's hard for people to, they can't relate to it because people don't want to relate to it.
Yeah, yeah. You're pretty much all in if you're going along with exorcism, yeah.
And you also wrote about paranormal survivors. I know we have to take a quick commercial break, but we'll be right back with more questions and to learn about your article you wrote.
Yeah, it's the Ghost Host Show with Sophia Temporelli on liveparanormal.com. We have Snowman James in the chat room there, and feel free to jump into liveparanormal.com chat room if you have a quick question for Dr. Lawrence. Make sure they're all capped so we can distinguish between the questions in the chat room. And today we welcome Dartmouth College Film and Media Emerita Professor in Ghost Channels, Paranormal Reality Television, and the Haunting of 21st Century America author Amy Lawrence. Ghost Channels and Professor Lawrence's other titles are available through Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or wherever books are sold. It's the late edition of the show, but we'll be right back. Now the sound bites. Woo!
Hi, this is Dustin Perry, the paranormal rock star, and you're listening to The Ghost Host with the most, Sophia Temporelli, only on LiveParanormal.com.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on LiveParanormal.com and History.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com. The only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
Hey, this is Zach Bagans from Ghost Adventures, and you are listening to the ghost host, Sophia Temporelli, on LiveParanormal.com.
Not only am I Dave Schrader, but I'm Dave Schrader of Travel Channel's The Holzer Files, and you're listening to Sophia Temporelli on LiveParanormal.com. I feel left out. I wanted to throw myself into your mix of voiceovers now.
I love it, you know. It's almost like we didn't leave break.
Oh, poor Dave, left out of the audio bites. Okay, Sophia and Professor Lawrence, you're back on.
Thank you so much again for coming on today, Amy.
Thanks.
So you also published an article called Paranormal Survivors Validating the Struggling Middle Class. Can you tell the audience about that and what inspired you to write it?
Well, that's also the first chapter of my book. It's what got me interested in writing this in the first place is I was doing a project and I had the TV on in the background and there were all of these episodes of Paranormal Survivors and The Haunting and The Haunted and all these first-person shows where people were talking about, I bought this house and it was my dream house and I put everything I had into it and then it turned out to be a nightmare and they end up, you know, sort of leaving the house. You know, I let the bank have it. I walked away from it. I just escaped with my life. And I thought, why would this be popular? People keep losing their houses. It's terrible. It's depressing. There's no happy endings. Why would people want to see this? And I realized that it was using the language of the paranormal, but what they were describing was very similar to the housing crisis of 2008, where people, their houses were underwater, they couldn't afford the mortgage, the house was not worth anything anymore. Even economic advisors were telling people, just walk away. It might hurt your credit rating, but it makes no sense to pay money on a house that isn't worth anything anymore. And so people were losing their houses at an enormous rate. And that there aren't any fictional TV shows about the housing crisis. It's just too depressing. But there are all of these paranormal shows about houses. And the American dream about you get your own house and you've got your own little place and white picket fence. And it turns out to be a burden that you just cannot handle, and you call investigators, and you call psychics, and you call exorcists and people to bless your house, and nobody helps, and nothing works. And I realized it's not an unhappy ending, that it's a tale of survival. It's like I was faced with burdens that I could never express to other people just how bad it was, and I survived. I got the heck out. I moved on with my life, and I left it all behind, and I'm free now. And this is what I faced down. So it becomes a tale of heroism, of being this baptism of fire, of going through this travail, and also seeking validation. It's like, I went through this, and I expect you to believe me because I'm telling you this happened. And it really happened. And even I doubted it, but then I came to believe it was real and it happened to me. And I experienced this. And it has material consequences in the world. You know, they lost their house. They lost all the money they put into the house. And yet they are strong and resilient and telling you about it. So that's what the article was about, and that's what the first chapter is about, is all these witnesses talking about. And across series, mm-hmm. whether it's Paranormal Survivors or Paranormal Caught on Camera or The Haunting or The Haunted, or Ghosts in My House, they tend to go through the same things over and over again. And also, it's a challenge for a television series to not have a regular cast, to not have the same people week after week that the audience forms a relationship with. Every time you turn on one of these shows, you don't know who you're going to see or what they're going through, but the trajectory is always pretty much always the same. It's first they doubt that there's anything going on, and then they start to suspect, and then they start to look for help, and it fails them, and then they have to decide on their own how to deal with the problem and or how to escape with their lives. And I found these very interesting. But most people, they don't talk about their own individual lives in terms of, you know, international economic trends or economic theory. That's not what they're interested in, or what's going on with the stock market or financial mm-hmm. issues. They expressed it in a much deeper, more personal, emotional level, which is where the rational doesn't touch that deep, deep part of you. And only this supernatural language begins to express what they feel and what they went through. And that I found really, really powerful and unexpected. It wasn't what I expected when I started watching paranormal shows, that it would be about, you know, housing issues. And yet a house is such a deeply personal thing. And sometimes, as you know, it can be multi-generational and personal.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you can you deal with it? Can you make it better? Or is the best day of your life when you move out? So
yeah.
That's what that article's about.
Do you think in regards to that, with the 2008 housing crisis, obviously people's emotions are very heightened during this time, the struggle of knowing how they can keep their family together, keep their pets safe, keep food on the table, and try and keep their house. Do you think the emotions that families are going through during this time could also affect and intensify the activity that is present in the home?
Oh, yes, absolutely. That it's a lot of the shows, they say, you know, that spiritual energy feeds on spiritual energy. So when people are ill, when they're stressed out, when they're anxious all the time, when they're having bad dreams to begin with, when they're fearful all the time, and they just cannot find a way through, that of course that this is going to stir up. If there's activity in the house, it's going to give that something to feed on. If the person thinks in paranormal terms, they're going to, it can manifest as what they it becomes a physical manifestation in their environment of what they're going through in their minds and in their emotions. So, it all is reflecting what they're going through, certainly.
Well, as a family, we thought this was interesting. Looking back, I think I had experiences in our house basically my whole life, but the activity really showed up when I was 9 years old, and I was nine in 2008. So for you to point out just, you know, the kind of large spike in people having these home hauntings and the struggle with them and, you know, just the devastation it had on families was really interesting as someone who went through, you know, a home haunting during that time period.
Well, they say that one of the most stressful things you can do in life is a death in the family, divorce, or moving. Just even if you're moving for a good reason, leaving a house and going someplace else is a very, very stressful thing. So that kind of stress, anything that's going to lead to your leaving your house, is going to stir up all sorts of things. It's going to make everything intensified emotionally.
Absolutely. And I know we're coming towards the end of the show, so I really want the audience to hear about some of your other books you've written on film. If you could give the audience a brief summary of each of your other books.
Well, my last book was about Montgomery Clift, the actor, and he's an actor that, you know, I've loved all my life since I was little, and he was famous for, he's a good friend of Elizabeth Taylor. They were in a lot of movies together, and he's in From Here to Eternity and A Place in the Sun and Red River with John Wayne, and he was very famous in his day, and that also has a spiritual dimension because people said that he had the face of a saint or an archangel, but that he was haunted by demons, and they mean this metaphorically, but halfway through his career, he had this really terrible car accident that messed up his face, and so people would say, oh, it's a shame he's not pretty anymore. But when I was little, I grew up listening to him, because there were recordings of him doing, like, Glass Menagerie, and just records, LP records, and I always loved his voice, and I loved his voice particularly when he was older. He died at, like, 46. He was very young. He drank too much and took a lot of pills. And people blame that on the accident, but he was drinking too much before that anyway. But I was wanted to compare that. So people talk about him as having the face of a saint and being just this unworldly, beautiful guy when he's young and a big movie star. And then after the accident, they talk about him as if he's a martyr, that he's an icon of suffering, and that it's written on his face, which is damaged after the accident. But I wanted to talk about his work, that he, while all of this talk about him is going on, he was really dedicated to his work. And when he died, even though he was gay and addicted to drugs and self-destructive, when he died, one of the most beautiful obituaries of him was in the Vatican newspaper, saying that no matter what his problems were, he's a model of his dedication to his craft, how seriously he took his work, that he never phoned it in, that he never made a movie he didn't believe in, that he always did everything he could to excel as an actor. And I found that very important. So I love Montgomery Clift, and I wanted to write about his whole career and not just when he was pretty. Before that, I've written about women, a book called Echo and Narcissus, which is about women and their voices and how film technology or sound technology, sometimes most sound technology in movies, you just ignore it. It's just part of people open their mouths and talk, and you take it for granted, and the music starts playing, and you take it for granted. But I noticed in a whole bunch of movies where sometimes you would see the sound technology, you would see the microphone intentionally or sound recording equipment. It would become part of the plot, and it would often be associated with women who were trouble, that they talked too much or they didn't talk enough, that their voices needed to be used against them to sort of surreptitiously record them and then play back their voice so they can't deny that they said something, and where sound is... and telephone technology, I talk about Sorry, Wrong Number with Barbara Stanwyck, where she's an invalid trapped in a room and she overhears a plot to kill somebody and she tries to call the police, she tries to call the operator, she tries to use the phone to control her life, but it doesn't help her at all. And it's based on a radio play, so it's, again, a woman's voice filtered through sound technology. And written by Louise Fletcher. It's a really famous radio drama. Very interesting. And when the phone hangs up, the woman is dead. So her entire existence is with the phone technology. So it's that was my first book on women's voices and sound in being portrayed in film, and then the Montgomery Clift book and. Now Ghost Channels on television.
Well, I want to thank you
but
so much for coming
on. I also write a lot about actors. I've written about Rudolph Valentino, and I went to Italy and met the mayor of Castellaneta, where Rudolph Valentino's from.
Wow.
I've written about James Mason and in A Star is Born, especially, and
Jimmy Stewart.
And and Jimmy Stewart, particularly in Rope by Hitchcock, because I love Jimmy Stewart, and he's so good in Rope, and he's so good when he's borderline crazy in the 50s.
Well, you've written about some amazing people and amazing topics. I want to thank you so much for coming on today, Amy. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and you're always welcome back on in the future.
It's an honor, and the show's open. Show's open any time for you.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Amy.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Wow, amazing show today, Sophia. This is one of the best. I mean, the hour flew by as an audience member listening.
Absolutely. Professor Amy Lawrence was such a great guest. I want to thank her so much for coming on today. Thank you all for listening. Definitely make sure to check out Amy's books, Ghost Channels, Paranormal Reality Television, and The Haunting of the 21st Century America. Thank you, guys. I will talk to you guys again next week. Bye.
Yeah, I'm the plug guy. I'll get even further into it than that. Ghost Channels and Professor Lawrence's other titles are available through Amazon.com. BarnesandNoble.com or wherever books are sold. Upcoming, we have next weekend, Saturday, returning the show, we have on the 28th, April, the Psychic Housewife of New Jersey is seen on the Holzer Files. Author, Ghost Adventures producer, lecturer, Jeff Belanger returns the program on November 4th. Gognac Paranormal Investigators, Ron Iacovetti and Lourdes Gonzalez, they'll be on the program on November 11th. Honey Lodge documentary producers Kendall and Vera Welton will be on the program on November 18th. You don't want to miss any of these upcoming shows. So like the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, her Facebook fan page, to learn of the guests as we learn of them real time. And the Ghost Host show on liveparanormal.com. Thank you, James, in the chat room, too, as well as others. And we'll see you guys next week.
Hi, this is Debbie, as seen on Ghost Adventures. You're listening to The Ghost Host with your host, Sophia Temporelli, on liveparanormal.com.
God bless you all.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com. The only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.